Thanks, Mark. My presentation today is taking a look at the interactions between zinc and biochar. And what I really want to focus on is how we quantify zinc removal, and then also how we infer mechanisms given our current methods. As you've seen from previous studies, heavy metal contamination is an important environmental concern that requires remediation. In the past, to remove zinc from soils, different strategies have included the application of lime, phosphate salt, and fly ash, all with the idea that this would immobilize the zinc largely through precipitation reactions. In recent years, there's been growing interest in using biochar as a remediation tool for zinc. But if we're going to use this biochar, we should be able to answer a pretty simple question, which is, when we add the biochar to the contaminated soil, where does the zinc go? Right now, the general assumption is that the zinc that's removed from solution is in some way associated with that biochar. With compounds like pesticides, it's pretty straightforward trying to show this association, but with metals like zinc, it becomes a bit more challenging due to this issue of speciation. As the pH increases, we can start to see zinc precipitate out, in this case just as a hydroxide. So with this added challenge, if we really want to kind of keep tabs on zinc in the system, it's important for us to understand the mechanism of its removal. There have been quite a variety of mechanisms proposed for zinc removal, including ion exchange and surface precipitation. But as we continue to cite these mechanisms, it's important for us to stop and ask ourselves whether or not we've sufficiently proven these to be true, given our current methods. A good place to start then is by looking at how we quantify this removal. And typically this is done through a batch equilibration study or column leaching experiments. In both cases, it starts in a similar way. We set our initial conditions in solution. We can pick a zinc concentration and usually set our pH to around 5.5, somewhere where we know the zinc is going to be in its nice cationic form. Then we add the solution to the biochar, wait, let the system equilibrate, then we centrifuge or filter to separate the solution, which is analyzed for zinc. Presumably, the zinc no longer in solution is going to be on your biochar. And this is a tried and true method for pesticides, but with zinc, we can run into problems with this step here, when we centrifuge and filter. And this is because of that speciation and the potential for precipitation in the system. So if we do have a precipitate, there's a chance that it might be removed in that filtering process, and we could falsely attribute it to sorption onto our biochar. So to just show the general effects of filtering and its potential to remove the zinc, we started with a zinc solution at around 65 ppm. In this case, we brought the pH up to 10 so that we knew we were in a range where we would expect to precipitate. And sure enough, when we filtered it, we removed almost all of the zinc. But to put that in more of a realistic system for the biochar, we also looked at the effects of filtering on the supernatant. And in this case, we performed just a simple batch study, starting with biochar. In this case, it was I believe this was an applewood biochar, and we added a 4 ppm zinc solution at a pH of 5.5. So these are very standard starting conditions for this type of study. And in this case, when we looked at the supernatant, we didn't see any effect of filtering, even though our pH here was all the way up at 10.7. So then why did we have this difference here, that it was removed from solution but not our high pH supernatant? One option is that the biochar was just really good at sorbing it. It took all the zinc out of solution, nothing precipitated. But then the other option is that centrifuging step we took. And as it turns out, heavy metals are heavy in this case. So here we took just that initial solution that we used in our sorption study, and we raised the pH to around 10 to match the supernatant. And after centrifuging for just 15 minutes around 1600 RPM, we found that close to 80% of the zinc was removed from the solution, which in the centrifuge tube just looked like a perfectly clear solution with no visible precipitates. And so the challenge here is that we wouldn't see these effects of filtering or centrifuging in our blanks. And that's because the blanks really represent that pristine initial solution where we set our conditions and we wouldn't have any changes in our speciation. But as soon as we throw biochar into this system, we start to see these dramatic changes in the solution chemistry. So in the graphic here, you can see the release of different salts, ions, dissolved organic carbon, that ash fraction. We can start to see mineral dissolution, particularly with carbonates. And all of these things then go on and affect the pH, the ionic strength, and the oxidation reduction potential of the solution, which are very important factors for our speciation. So with all of this going on in solution, a logical question then is how much of the zinc removal is due to solution, and really, how important is that solid biochar in the system? So to answer this question, we did a simple comparison. We looked at the removal of zinc by a biochar, and then also the removal by its aqueous extract, just shaking it in DI water. And you can see in the blue bars, we have the biochar removal by just that standard batch study, and we see almost 100% is removed. So it appears to be really efficient. But then what gets interesting is when we look at that aqueous extract, particularly for our apple and pine biochars, with no solid in this system, we still removed close to 80% of the zinc that was in solution. And so this really serves to demonstrate the importance of the solution chemistry here. But with solution chemistry, there's a lot of factors, as I mentioned. So we wanted to narrow this down just a little bit more. And so we looked at the pH here. Obviously, all of these are high pH, so we would expect some precipitation. But to see how much we should expect, we use just visual MinTech to estimate how much of the zinc is going to be in solution and how much precipitated at the pH of the aqueous extracts here. Now, for apple and pine, the two that were particularly efficient in removing zinc, we would expect around 90% of the zinc to be removed as a precipitate. So in this case, it appears to be simply a pH effect. And to further demonstrate this, we adjusted the pH of our aqueous extract down to below 6, and when we added the zinc here, we saw no removal. But with the rice hulls, at a near-neutral pH, we wouldn't expect any of the zinc to be precipitated from solution. However, when we looked at the aqueous extract, we still saw around 15% of the zinc was removed. And in this case, it's suggesting that some other factor in that solution chemistry is important. It could be other ions that it could be precipitating with. Here we only looked at the zinc hydroxide as a potential precipitate, just to keep things simple. But it does beg the question of solution chemistry and how important that is compared to our solids. So far, I've mainly been talking about our methods and how we have some potential pitfalls in our interpretation of zinc removal. But now I want to shift a little bit more towards the mechanisms and how we interpret these based on these same methods. Many studies use kinetics to infer the mechanisms of sorption and removal. These can be very useful information. Generally speaking, with zinc and other heavy metals, we often see a very rapid equilibration period for their removal on the order of a few minutes to a couple hours, and the data often fit a pseudo-second order model very well. From this, we then conclude that the removal mechanism is by chemisorption. That would be our rate-limiting step, which is surprising in this case, given the porosity of these materials, that we don't see this diffusion limitation. So this would suggest that we're going to see the zinc on the surface of this biochar. Another good way to get an idea of what mechanisms are at play is to look at the desorption. And again, broadly speaking here, many studies report, at least to some extent, irreversible sorption of zinc on biochar. Now, this could be site-specific chemisorption, showing the importance of the functional groups and these very strong binding energies, but we also still have this option of precipitation. Now, this could be surface precipitation on the biochar. It could also be precipitation near the surface of the biochar if we have more localized pH effects, or it could simply be precipitation in that bulk solution. All of these are going to give you that same general observation of irreversible sorption. So if we're really trying to get at whether or not the zinc is associated with this biochar, it makes sense to look at the biochar itself after it's been exposed to the zinc, which many people have done. And this is often studied through tools like FTIR and SEM. For the FTIR data, it's often compared our initial biochar to the biochar after zinc sorption or exposure. And what we're looking for are changes in its spectra. But what's often cited are these losses in intensity or slight shifts in the spectra. However, what we don't see are these clear indications of zinc-oxygen bonds or zinc-carbon bonds. And what makes this a little more complicated as well is that with FTIR, we don't have a statistical assessment to say whether or not it's a significant change when we have a slight shift in intensity. Then with the SEM, though, here we can look at these pictures and we can literally see zinc here. So you'd think there's no question that zinc and biochar are associated. But when we look at the images, what we often see are these crystals of the zinc. It's not blending in with the biochar in your images. And with this observation, we often jump to the conclusion then that it's a surface precipitate. But we skip that one step in the middle where we're considering just bulk precipitation from solution. So we have to ask ourselves whether or not we've really seen evidence of an association here. Looking at the aqueous extract data, we saw that the solid biochar isn't required in solution to act as a nucleation site. And furthermore, this could simply be an artifact of centrifuging, because when we scoop that biochar out of the tube and put it on an SEM stub, what we're looking at is really just a collection of the heavy stuff that was in that system. Now, I've already talked about a number of complications, but really this is just the beginning when we start to consider other factors in the system. The influence of ionic strength, the time factor, and also co-applications. When biochar is used for remediation purposes, we've seen talk of adding lime or compost, and all of these are going to further affect the solution chemistry and how it's going to interfere, or rather interact, with the biochar. So in conclusion, the proposed mechanisms very well may be correct. However, few have been conclusively demonstrated because there are a number of steps in our methods that are susceptible to misinterpretation. And I would argue that solution chemistry is often underappreciated when we're looking at these systems, and using different tools like studying the aqueous extracts could be very useful. So finally, there's a number of factors that we have to consider when we use these in the field to better model how we study them in the lab. So thank you very much, and I'll take any questions. Thank you.